baby is a defining moment in a woman's life.
But what about the birth of a mother?
That's right, when a baby is born, so too is a mother.
This transition from woman to mother has a name. It's called matrescence.
This developmental stage is as powerful and irreversible as adolescence, and yet few women have ever heard of it.
So let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it. Each episode, we will bring you honest and thought-provoking conversations, evidence-based research and knowledgeable guests in order to help you emerge a more powerful and aligned version of yourself.
So join us, your hosts Kelly and Bree, as we attempt to make sense of our matrescence journey and to help you make sense of yours.
Okay, everyone, welcome back to the Matrescence Podcast. We are recording this less than 2 weeks out from Christmas, so we're going to be having a pretty high-stakes conversation today, because if I hear one more person tell me how exhausted they are, how frustrated, how excited and anxious all at the same time about all of the feelings, things that we need to do, pressures of the lead up to this arbitrary thing we call Christmas. So we decided today to do an open mic conversation about all the stuff going on, all the things of the conversations we're having, both with Bree on social media from her audience, me through my contacts, my work, and to some extent social media. And let's bring up some of this stuff and talk about it. Can't promise any resolutions, can't promise any, you know, quick tips, but sometimes just talking about it helps us to validate how we're feeling. And occasionally we take away a little idea that might help us. So what about you, Bree?
Yeah, let's dive in. So I did actually put this question out to everyone on social media this week. What are you doing to help with the mental load of Christmas? And that's something we really want to talk about, because I'm not hearing enough conversations enough about what we are as women and mothers taking on at this time of year. And basically the only answer I got was lists and more lists. A couple of women said to start shopping early, but you know, we're 2 weeks out from Christmas, so that ship has definitely sailed. And unfortunately, I'm not one of those people. I'm definitely a leave it to the last minute and scramble kind of person. So I actually have done a fair bit of my Christmas shopping, which is uncharacteristic for me. But my goal for the year has been, for Christmas really, has been to just go as low stress as possible. And that's easier said than done, but that's my goal. That's where I'm at. What about you?
Well, this is probably one of the areas where I have the most boundaries in my life to do with the mental load. There are many other areas where I'm not very good at putting boundaries, but I would say, you know, Anthony and I've been together 15 years, and one thing was that prior to meeting him, I carried the mental load for my whole family. So Everyone would write to me and say, what should I get for mum? What should I get for dad? What should I get for your brother? I would inevitably do the shopping. Inevitably, I would end up out of pocket. Inevitably, I would end up wrapping every present to the point of sticking the cards on and putting a pen in their hand to write the card.
Buying your own gift and wrapping it, popping it under the tree.
I did that for so many years. And when I met Anthony and I spent the first Christmas with him, which is a whole other story, because that is how I ended up pregnant, because meeting his family was pretty intense for me.
And you needed some stress relief at the end of the day.
Well, and also I'm not proud of this, but I was really drunk, because it was literally like 9:30 on Christmas morning and it was out of hand. And I was like, I need a drink. So I just started drinking champagne at 9:30 in the morning on that Christmas.
I'm sure many people can relate to that kind of Christmas with the in-laws.
And let's just say that I can almost pinpoint to the day that I had a spontaneous ovulation, because I was mapping my ovulation at that time. Mm-hmm. And I fell pregnant with Angus. So, but one of the things that they did, and even without this load, there was craziness, they had a rule that the day that when you turn 18, that's the last time you get gifts.
Oh, I love that rule.
And it was hard and fast. No gifts for anyone over 18. Mm. And I was like, wow. And you actually all like live by it. And he was like, if you don't, that's your problem. Like, it's no secret. It's always been a rule in my family. And a part of me went, yeah, I love that rule. And from that day on, I then played that back into my family. And it's my family has still never quite gotten it. In fact, just yesterday, I got a parcel delivered from my dad with a Christmas present. And every year I say to him, Dad, I don't want your time. Sorry, I don't want your money. I don't want your gifts. I want your time. But it's awesome. That's his language. And he loves giving me a gift and he doesn't expect anything in return. Mm. And that's important to him to wrap it up and write the card, etc. So I do feel a little bit like he's getting, you know, probably repaying those other 20 years or so, maybe nearly 30 years where I did a lot of the mental load. So in that sense, for me, Christmas shopping for gifts has not been on my mental load because I simply don't do it. And even with our kids, we have always been very, very minimalist around Christmas. Christmas has always been for the family, which means we would typically get a gift for the house. Sometimes that was an appliance, which sounds really boring, but let me tell you, 12 years later, my Maggi Mix still whips up an amazing pavlova.
You know, when I was 18 and you told me that, I was a bit like, oh, that sounds awful. And now that I'm like a mum of two, I'm like, that is a great idea. We need to embrace that. But I think it brings up a really good point that, you know, so much of what we do now for our own families is shaped by our experiences in childhood. And I've been reflecting on that a lot lately because I heard the saying a little while ago that the challenge of previous generations has been to provide enough for their children. That's been their struggle. And the challenge of our generation is not to spoil them with excess.
And Let's just say that again. The challenge of prior generations has been providing enough.
Yeah.
The challenge of our generation is almost the reverse, how to not spoil them with too much.
Yes, absolutely. And that was my experience growing up. We had lavish Christmases, absolutely excessive. And I think my parents really took a lot of joy in that because they both grew up in very working class families where that was not possible for them. So when they came into money, worked hard to have money, they wanted to be able to spoil us in that way. And it was awesome. We loved it. It was ridiculous. But then when I became an adult and had my own children, I started going, well, firstly, do I want to carry this on? What traditions do I want to take with me? Which ones do I want to leave behind? Is this realistic for our family? Does it align with our values? So those first couple of Christmases I found really challenging, trying to find my feet as a parent and start traditions and live by our values in our family, but also being respectful of the ones that my parents had started and now also that my in-laws had, and trying to integrate them all into one day is tough, right? And I think that what you said is really insightful in terms of that is how your dad wants to show his love for you at this time in this season. And it's something that I got quite wrong, was almost like opting out. I was going, nope, this is too much. I don't want to be a part of this. We're doing it differently. And I upset a lot of people. And it's not that I don't like Christmas. It was just me going, you know, I want to find my own feet and do it my way to an extent, and struggling to carve out that space for our family amidst the chaos of everyone else's Christmases.
Mm. And I think because there's so many facets to this conversation, so specifically here we're talking about gift giving, which is one form of showing our love, and realising that, you know, we've referred over the months to a number of times as the love languages. And whilst I'm no expert on it, I'm certainly noticing that more and more in terms of that alignment of what is my values mixed in with what sort of love language I have. So, you know, one of my values is we're fairly much minimalist. So if I'm buying someone a gift, it means that the mental load is like triple because it's not just like I'll just nip into Kmart and grab something. It's like, is this going to be useful? Is it landfill? Does it contribute to the waste in society? Will they value it as much as I do? Will they understand the thought? And it's like, sometimes I've just gone, I'm not getting anything.
Because you can't do that for 30 people, can you? We just don't have the time or the mental resources.
Yeah, that's right. And then the other element, and this morning I went and had a lovely foot massage, which was a birthday gift because I'm a December birthday person as well, which is difficult for people. And it's a conversation I had a long time ago with my mother-in-law, because whilst they have no gifts for over 18s for Christmas, birthday was the special event so people could get gifts for birthday. And we went through a number of years where I was like, don't buy me anything, because I'm lucky enough in my life that if I want something, I can get it.
Yeah.
But I really value time and I really value you know, acts of service and things that make me feel good. And so we've come to an arrangement. Every year she buys me a foot massage and I go and I spend, you know, 45 minutes to an hour by myself getting a foot massage. And then I message her a message of love and thanks to say, thank you so much. You gave me the opportunity to sit down. And it's not just the money for the voucher. It's that she gave me permission to take time out to do something for myself. And that's something I've managed to negotiate with her. Conversely, I had an experience this week where someone gave me a gift, which I felt was really uncomfortable about, actually. Like, I thought it was really
excessive.
And I felt almost shame and embarrassment. Like, why? Like, you can't, you know, I don't want you to be spending your valuable time and money on me in this way, just saying thank you. And, you know, they felt that I'd made a massive impact on their life, which was wonderful. But it was so odd to feel that reflected in return about that feeling that you get when someone gives you something that you maybe, I don't know, it's so conflicting, the emotions.
Yeah, and I may be reading this situation wrong. We spoke briefly before jumping on about it, but I think it also is really challenging when you have different, you know, income brackets, you know, and this is something within our family where we have people that earn significantly more than us and people that earn significantly less. So then there's these people that feel that they may need to overcompensate and spend more than they can really afford to, because, you know, if someone's buying you this big lavish gift and you're giving them socks, well, there's nothing wrong with that, but it can feel really uncomfortable. And that's something that we definitely struggled with in the first couple of years of being married and going, you know, we are purchasing gifts that people may or may not like, they may or may not use, and it's costing us a lot of money. And I know that they could go out and purchase this for themselves if they really wanted it. Mm-hmm. But we had people within our circle who really felt that adult gifts were important. So we're trying to juggle that. Now, what I did this year was I sent a message out to my family and I just said, I want to be really clear that this year I'm not buying for any adults. We don't have the means to financially, and I want to be able to just enjoy December without running around through the shops, you know, doing that mental load. And I feel like that's really the right decision for our family this year. Now, on the other side of that, if you want to buy a gift for us, if that is important to you and that's what you want to do, you're welcome to. Do it knowing that you're not getting anything from us, but it's absolutely your choice. And what I'll lack in giving gifts, I'm going to make up in other areas. I'm really looking forward to, we're going to the Enchanted Gardens in Brisbane to see the lights. And I always help the kids make reindeer food and we make Santa's cookies and I do a cocktail of the year at Christmas. So there are other ways that I'm contributing and showing my love and buying into the celebrations. But I really felt that this year I had to put a boundary up and say, hey, I can't do another year of this because it just makes it unenjoyable for me. Now, I did end up changing my mind on that the other day.
Before you change your mind,
yes.
Out of curiosity, what was the response? Because that was in a family chat, so yeah. It was like a public declaration of where you stand, or at least an opening play.
Yeah.
Then what happened?
It went well this year. So in previous years has not gone well, and on reflection that was because I was, you know, trampling on other people's traditions and values and ideas about Christmas. So I think by this year, by saying, this is my personal choice, I hope you can respect it, it was better received than any other years. So overall, super positive. Now, I did end up changing my mind on that. A couple of days ago, I had the idea to do Bad Santa. So for those that don't know, it's a Christmas game where you open a gift, you have the same amount of gifts as people, and you get to open one and then you can steal from each other. Now, years and years and years ago, maybe when I was about 12, a family member did this for Christmas. Now, she said at the time, and, you know, I imagine it's true, that she just couldn't afford to buy gifts for everyone. And she felt quite a lot of shame and upset around that. But she's like, this is something I knew I could do. And we had the best time. We spent an hour or 2 hours playing this. We laughed, we stole from each other, and it was hilarious. And I was kind of like, oh, I'd love to do that again. So we set a budget, really pretty minimal, and we went to Kmart. And I said to my husband, if we can't buy it here, we're not buying it. We're not overcomplicating this. We've got a budget. We've got 45 minutes. Let's do it.
And just for clarity, because this will give you a size of the magnitude of the issue here, just in your immediate family that is there on Christmas Day is
16.
16.
So we needed 16 gifts. Thank goodness for the Secret Santa section at Kmart because we were able to get a lot there. But yeah, we got some really great gifts. Like we have some Lush products, which I'd already bought for someone that I chucked in there, and then some gag presents. So it meant that I was able to share the mental load as well, because this was right up my husband's alley, right? He's like, gag gifts? I got it. Leave it to me.
And you had fun shopping together for the first time, which again,
we did.
Is a big issue of like, well, I'm not buying for your mother or your sister. I don't know them. Blah, blah, blah.
Absolutely. We only had one argument in the middle of Kmart when I said, should we get a chopping board or a water bottle? And he's like, I don't care. And I turned around and said, you get to choose not to care. That's male privilege, because you don't have to carry the mental load and do the emotional labour on Christmas.
And was there like a crowd of women around there nodders? Like when like, the politician
what
speaks?
What she said. Yes. And he went, oh, and walked off. And then I came back and I said, sorry about that. I'm feeling a bit fragile. And so I bottled it all back up and I've saved it to talk about in this conversation today. But overall, it was a really positive experience. I came home, I put Netflix on. I told my husband I'm not doing any parenting. This is me for the next hour. Wrapped them all, they're under the tree, and I'm done. And I'm excited about it for the first time.
Cool. So you need to explain the rules of Bad Santa, yes. By the way, because so you have X number of gifts, X yep. number of people, and then you've got to explain the rules, because I have been involved in this once before too, and it is hilarious, especially if you have a really funny dynamic.
I think so, yeah. You can definitely Google it, because I'm still a bit sketchy on the details, honestly. But essentially you sit in a circle, the first person chooses a wrapped gift, opens it.
And you usually pick a number anonymously.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
I think you, like if there's 16, you draw straws so that it's not
who's first to open, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So Kel might open it and get a pack of Lush bath bombs and be like, yes, I'll keep it, amazing. And then if I'm next to open, I get to choose whether I open a new gift or I steal hers. And so then she'll have to open another gift. And it could be something really crappy. So
did you throw her some really like dodgy ones, like fake dog poo and stuff?
Yes. So there's one that Matt really loved. It's an apron just covered in sausages. Like real sausages, not even like comic ones. What else is there? Yeah, there's some shockers in there. But I think we'll have such a fun time doing it.
I can imagine some of your family members actually wearing that around the Barbie though.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see who ends up with what.
Absolutely. And all the gifts are going to get used. They're not wasteful, or they're going to give us a laugh. So it's not like we've just purchased crap, because it is something I'm mindful of and feel quite anxious about. It's just like the consumerism around Christmas. As you said, the effects on the planet, and more selfishly, like, where are we going to put this stuff? You know, we're moving in a month and I'm going, oh, everything we're gifted, we have to pack and move. And it's that real physical toll of what we get, which is, of course, a huge, huge privilege, but it's also a burden in some ways. And I think that that's worth acknowledging.
Absolutely. So we've kind of covered presents, but it really leads to another conversation about what the routine is of Christmas, whether it's Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Boxing Day, yeah. Complex family dynamics, whether you have your children with you or not. Some parents will be facing a Christmas issue where they didn't get the time of their choosing with their children, or potentially even their parents, because we've got border closures. So some people will not have a choice. And at other times there's this pressure to travel, to be in multiple places. You know, well, you know, last year you got lunch. Why can't I have lunch this year? I don't want to drive because I would like to have a glass of champagne or a beer. You know, and I had a conversation this week with one of my colleagues who was facing that. She only had her son for half of the Christmas Day, so there's a handover in the middle.
Yeah,
which is heartbreaking. She's got her parents and her new partner don't agree on the time, and she's carrying the load of all three of those, the intersection of that complexity of having to get her child to the other parent, make sure her parents are happy because she's their child. And her partner, who's going, well, what about me? I don't want to do that. And I so felt for her because, again, this is one thing, many years of my life where I'm not good on the mental load, but I threw my toys out of the pram about, I don't know how long ago, maybe 5 years ago, and I said, Christmas Day is the one day of the year where I do not want to leave my house. You are always welcome to come to my house if you choose. I will never put pressure on you, but I will be in my pool, now that I have one, because I didn't always, on Christmas Day. And also, I don't care what I eat. So if you want to come to my house, that's okay, but don't expect me to cook for you, because I'm not doing it. I cook almost every other day of the year, and I am not cooking on Christmas Day. So I'll tell one funny anecdote, because how that's played out is that my dad lives in a different state. So every few years we try to spend a Christmas together somewhere, either where he lives or overseas or do something. That's been kiboshed for the last few years, which is a big shame. But that's one thing out of the situation. We don't have that complexity. For my mum, she is, God love her, she's amazing. She always takes in any orphans wherever she is. So she will, and she loves a big Christmas
day. That's my mum too.
Yep, she loves to put on a big spread. And she has learned to respect my wish not to leave my house on Christmas Day, and she will always have a big Christmas with her and her husband and whoever else happens to be around who has nowhere else to go. And they always come on Boxing Day with all the leftovers, and they come to my place and I put on booze and we swim and have a chill time. Anthony's mum, who's on her own, she likes to come here on Christmas Day because Christmas is really important to her. It's part of her value system and her religion. But every year she says, "What do you want to eat on Christmas Day?" And I say, "I don't care." And I said, "Well, what do you want to eat on Christmas Day?" And I said, "Would you like me to get you some prawns, some seafood?" She goes, "I like turkey." I said, "Great." She says, "What do you want with the turkey?" I said, "I don't care." And I said, "Well, why don't you just get a turkey crown? Because you really, no, I only want a big turkey." I'm like, there's three of us who are going to eat turkey. And I'm like, you know what? Actually, whatever you want. So we've had this conversation for many years now. And even this week, she says, "What do you want with the turkey?" I said, "I don't care. What do you want with the turkey?" She goes, "Well, we could have salad or roast vegetables." I said, "Kathy, you don't really like salad. You like roast vegetables." "Yeah, but I thought I'd ask you what you want." I said, "I don't care. I actually don't care. I will drink champagne and eat chocolate all day if you let me.
Yeah.
If you happen to cook, I'll probably eat some, but I can't even guarantee that. So whatever you want to eat, you cook. It's completely on you. I promise you, I will never." And it was just like this same conversation. And I was laughing because I'm thinking, even for me, who's really clear about what I want and holds my ground, it's still such an absurd conversation to have where I'm literally like, "You ask me every year and every year I tell you the same thing. I actually don't care. I love that you want to cook turkey." But I literally say to her, "If you want to eat turkey on Christmas Day, you're going to have to cook it."
Yeah.
"Because you're welcome in my home, but I am not cooking on Christmas Day." So.
Absolutely. And, you know, as viewers with us and many other people, it's women having these conversations, right? What should this day look like? What time should we start? What activities should we do? And you seem to have opted out of that almost completely, to your credit. But for many of us, you know, we're trying to navigate so many moving parts, right? Even if we were all nuclear families, you know, you have your partner's family. And in our case, there's four adults now. I have three siblings. We all have partners. And my parents, they have parents and they have partners. And it's just like this web of people and so much pressure to catch up on one day of the year. And so what a lot of families end up doing is going, "Oh, we'll do morning here and afternoon here and then dinner at dad's." And we're just go, go, go all day. We're cooking, we're opening presents, we're traveling. And there's no time to actually just sink in and enjoy the day. And that's what I'm chasing this year, is that feeling of I'm actually just here and being present and enjoying it. Because years ago when I was pregnant and I'd heard so many people talk about, you know, "Oh, just you wait for the toddler years and blah, blah, blah." I think we often talk about parenting quite negatively, rightly or wrongly. And someone said to me, "Just you wait. If you think Christmas is good now, wait till you have kids. It's even better. You thought Christmas was good when you were a child. It's nothing compared to seeing your own child on Christmas." And that's been my experience. I absolutely love just getting to sit and watch him, you know, take so much delight and pleasure in this time of the year. And if I'm busy in the kitchen and cooking and cleaning up and traveling, we miss that. We're just all exhausted and grumpy, and I'm more prone to losing my temper with my little boy. And so a few decisions have been made for us over the last couple of years due to COVID with, you know, family not traveling and that kind of thing. And it's honestly actually been such a big relief for us. And I know that that's absolutely not going to be the experience for some people who, you know, were really hoping that by now they would be traveling home for Christmas to see their family. Maybe they've been isolated from them for 2 or 3 years. But for us, there's definitely been a positive that's come out of that in just getting to be more still and enjoy it.
Mm. And look, we probably won't do a deep dive into gift giving for children here, but because I think that's a whole other minefield. I guess the purpose of these conversations is probably to share stories, and I'll share one other story, which I may have shared before, but I can't remember. So when my brother had children before me, and he is absolutely someone whose love language is gifts, and he gives amazing gifts. And I can remember the first few years quite distinctly of him having children going to his house on Christmas Day. This was back when I was still carrying a lot of the mental load before I met Anthony. And there was a moment of panic of seeing his Christmas tree, that the lounge room, that it wasn't just that presents were under the Christmas tree. The lounge room was taken over by a sea of magnificently wrapped, color-coordinated, ribbon-bedorned, beautiful gifts worth incredible amounts. And I've always felt this sense of panic. And I remember distinctly the year when his kids were toddlers and watching them squeal with delight and have that delight in their eyes, run in there. But then what ensued was like this frenzy of ripping paper off to look what was inside, almost throwing the gift over their shoulder to get to the next gift, to tear the paper off, to go on. And it felt really like a frenzy to me. Mm. And there was a moment where, as a mother, sometimes you get these, I will never. And I had that moment of like, I don't ever want to see that from my kids. And I really carried that with me. So it was something we really struggled with, because as parents, we do want to give our kids everything.
Yeah.
Interestingly, the first few years that we had kids, we were incredibly restricted financially. We didn't have jobs. We, you know, were really, really struggling and very much living hand to week. And so what we did, and we lived in a country town, and this is a true story, we used to go to the tip shop throughout the year. It's a fantastic country town tip shop, and pick up different bits and pieces and also collect boxes over the years. And then we would go to, you know, the reject shop or the Tula shop and buy lots and lots of wrapping paper. And we would wrap up a big box, like a really big box, and fill it with a few things, and that would be what they opened on Christmas Day. And quite often we would rewrap things that they already had. And we also got into toy cycling, so, you know, they'd play for something for a while and put it away, etc. And that was a way that we could still see that delight and excitement of them, of opening something, and particularly boxes and wrapping paper. Kids love that, often to the point where they don't even look at what's inside. Mm-hmm. And so that became a way that we could still feel that joy and excitement when we really just couldn't afford to buy a lot of things. And in those days, we were incredibly lucky that our parents would help us out with bigger gifts. You know, when we got our first trampoline, my dad bought that. You know, my mum and Anthony's mum always contributed with beautiful things that we needed for the kids. But that then translated right through to when we could afford to buy a lot more things. We got a little bit out of whack and then went the other way and started to overcompensate. And then we had our reset moment, which is the story that I sometimes tell people, which was one year we decided that it was enough and that we had given our kids a lot. And so instead of buying them a gift, so every year we always give them a book and typically some other toys. And this year we decided we bought them a book, and then we actually donated the value of those gifts to an orphanage. And so what they got on Christmas morning when they went out, looked under the tree, was an envelope, and inside the envelope, and they were both just able to read, particularly the older one. They were maybe 5 and 6 at the time. And the letter said, congratulations, you've gifted these gifts. You've managed to provide, you know, 12 children in an orphanage in sub-Saharan Africa with gifts that they would never have otherwise had, or whatever the message was. And I can distinctly remember the kids kind of looking at each other and then looking at us and then reading it again and then looking at each other. And we went, well, you've got lots of great toys and books, so, you know, why don't you go and have a play? Mum and Dad will get up and we'll get dressed and we'll come out and have Christmas Day. And we heard them sort of wander off and then whisper down the hallway, and one of them said, is that it? The other one went, well, I guess. There's no other presents under the tree. The other went, oh, they're serious. Oh, okay, well, let's go for a play. And then they were off, and it was never mentioned again until many years later, when I was trying to extract from my now older children, what would you like for Christmas? What would you like Santa to bring you? Because if you don't believe, no, Santa doesn't come. And my elder son said to me, well, Mum, what's the point if you're just going to give all the gifts to the orphans? And he's teenage years, so it's been. I said, what do you mean? And he said, don't you remember that? I said, I remember. Do you remember? I said, you've never said anything about it. He goes, what's the point? He goes, but, you know, every year I do wonder, are we actually going to get something, or are you just going to give it to the orphans again? And I thought, like, in some ways I was like, that's so interesting. Mm. So anyway, that's my little story. And don't get me wrong, I mean, my kids, we are in a lucky position. I think there are people who will be listening who will be genuinely saying, how do I provide a wonderful experience for my children when I really can't afford it? And that's a a whole other experience.
It is, absolutely. And it reminded me of a story that my mum was telling me the other day about when we were kids, because something that I've really been grappling with lately is how to approach Santa. Now, we've kind of just dodged it up until this point. Tasha's only three, so we've just been quite vague with him. But as parents, I think we really value honesty. We value being respectful of him. We value, you know, bodily autonomy. And Christmas brings up a lot of that shit, right? Mm-hmm. You suddenly are putting your kid on a stranger's lap simply because they're dressed up as Santa. And, you know, aunts and uncles are coming over and saying, oh, give me a kiss. And, you know, the other day he said to me, I'm a bit worried about Santa coming into our house. How can we, you know, keep our house safe from Santa? If Santa can come in, what about other people? He's a very deep thinker. You can't bullshit him. You have to, you know, answer his questions. And we, my husband and I, haven't sat down and had a conversation about, like, are we telling him the same thing? You know, does Santa come through the keyhole or does he have his own special key?
Yeah, because we live in Queensland and there is no fireplace.
There's no chimneys here. And, you know, the other day he said to me, I just saw Santa in that shop. And now I'm seeing him in this shop. How is there two Santas at Carindale at the same time? And I was like, oh, you know, do we go the route of his magic or they're his helpers? And, you know, all of this mental load of, like, constructing what is essentially a lie around Christmas and upholding it. And some people feel that it's a good lie, it's justified, it's a white lie and it's magical. And others feel that it's problematic and it goes against what we are, you know, trying to instill in our children the other, you know, kind of 364 days of the year. And I don't know where we stand, quite frankly. I'm kind of flip-flopping back between the two. But the other day my mum said to me, you know, I don't think that we should lie to our kids about Santa. And I was shocked because my mum is, you know, like, kept the lie going for years and years till I was like 13 and she's still going, you know, if you don't believe, you don't receive. And she said, no, I don't. Don't you remember why we put the Christmas presents in the front room, which was a room that was kind of separate to our house that had its own lock? And I was like, yes, we didn't peek overnight. And she's like, no, because you guys were so scared of Santa coming into our house, we had to move the presents out there and lock the door so that you felt safe enough to fall asleep. And I was like, whoa, I remembered that totally different to what the situation actually was. And just all these things are coming up and there's this feeling of, well, you know, how do we not F up our kids, right? Is it going to damage them if we are honest with them and they miss out on that magic? Or are we going to damage them if we lie to them and they turn around one day and are like, hey, you weren't honest with me? And so it's a lot, basically. Yeah. You know, this is the mental load. And, you know, we were talking about this before coming on, in that this is not new. No woman is listening or experiencing this time of year and going, wow, this is so unfamiliar. If anything, it's painfully familiar because we know it's well established in research that women carry the bulk domestic load. They do more unpaid work than men in heterosexual relationships. We do the bulk of the mental load for our families and we are doing a lot of emotional labour in terms of keeping the peace and keeping everyone happy and going above and beyond to be pleasant. And Christmas just amplifies this and really it's like a pressure cooker almost. And we get to Christmas Eve and we are spent because, you know, what is in storybooks and Christmas songs, an entire village, right? There's elves, there's Santa's little helpers and Rudolph and all those people is essentially just one mum, right? One mum who's killing herself to make this day magical for her kids. And it's a lot to carry.
It is. And why one day? But that's a whole other thing. It's curious. I mean, I guess we love rituals as humans. We enjoy the ritual of it. The question is, how do we get the ritual out of it without the load? And what always reminds me is that these situations just bring up issues of communication and where we haven't got a common understanding and a common agreement about something. They just amplify them because you can truck along just fine sometimes going, oh, we're just going to dance around that for a while. We won't address that issue. And often, I suppose, some of these mental load questions, we can manage them for a while, but as we get closer and closer to Christmas, there is that feeling of what I like to refer to as I just want to throw it all on the ground and just go, I'm out, I'm done.
Absolutely. And I think that we fall into this pattern of women do more of the mental load. So we get good at it. So we do it because we're good at it. And it's easier for everyone in the family except for us. You know, it's easier for our husbands or our wives or our children, but, you know, it's a lot for us to carry. And I think that at this time of year, boundaries are so incredibly important and they're going to look different for everybody. But with boundaries, I think you have to also accept that things are not going to be the way that you want them or hoped they would be. It might be to a lower standard than you could have achieved, but we cannot carry Christmas for everybody, right? And for me this year, that was saying to my husband, I'm not shopping for any of your family. If you want to give them gifts, that's on you. And in previous years, I've done it and I've thought really deeply about what will they use, what do they like, that kind of thing. But he knows his family better than I do. And if he takes a little bit of time, he can get them better gifts than I could. And if he doesn't, that's his choice. But I think as women, it's almost expected from us that we will do it. Mm-hmm. And so we feel if we're not participating, we'll be looked down on for it. Whereas men don't have that. Mm. You know, after a Christmas lunch, they can sit on the couch and put their feet up. And in my family, at least, no one would think twice. But the women are busy doing the dishes and packing things away and picking up the wrapping paper. And it's like it never stops for us.
Mm. You raise a really interesting point there, which is about redrawing boundaries and doing that consciously as opposed to my moment of I just flip out and, like, that's it, I'm done. Yeah. But maybe that is something, and whether we have enough time to do that this year or think about it consciously in multiple areas of our life is what does it look like to redraw those boundaries and how do I need to communicate that in a way that is that whole this is as much about me as it is about you. So I can't change the way you're going to react, but I can tell you this is my new boundary that I'm operating to. And obviously that's something that you certainly tried. What's really interesting is you almost redrew a new boundary around gift giving that you weren't going to do anything. And then when you decided to do Bad Santa, it's almost a bonus.
Oh, I loved it because suddenly I love gift giving, right? Yep. When I find a gift that I know someone will love, I will buy it and give it to them. I don't feel I need to have to wait for a birthday or Christmas, and I will take such delight in that. Mm. But as soon as it's, you know, forced upon me, it's an obligation, I don't want to do it. Mm. So when suddenly it was like, oh, this is my choice and I want to do that. Mm-hmm. I had the best time with it and I was super happy to do it. It's the expectation that I was rejecting. And I think that, you know, when it comes to Christmas, we have to accept we're going to disappoint people, right? You are going to let people down. You're not going to be able to be everywhere at once and get everything right. But we cannot constantly let ourselves down year after year by overextending ourselves and, you know, financially and time and energy. At some point, we do have to choose us, choose our family, and that can be super uncomfortable because we are socialized to be good girls. We're socialized to be pleasant and helpful and keep the peace, and it can be really uncomfortable and really upsetting for a lot of people when you suddenly say, actually, no, we're not doing it that way this year.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Oh, so many different things popping into mind of I often like to experiment and dabble, and one of the things that I've dabbled with this year is that if you weren't booked in with me in December during November to do something, then if someone as they got to the end of November started saying, let's catch up before Christmas, I was like, let's book in a date in February because mm-hmm. January is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's exhausted and got no money left.
Yeah.
so my February is looking kind of busy, but I'm excited about that because by then I'll be ready to go back out again into the world and socialize and have fun. Yep. But it's so, you know, it's that whole thing of like, if I'm running into someone and they're like, oh, let's catch up before Christmas in November, I'm like, look, how about we go February? February's good. And it's been an interesting experiment, but that's just one example. You can't really do that with your family. And I certainly get that. The other thing is how do we enjoy the bits that we like? Because there is so much joy. For some people, that is about lights and reindeer food and those rituals of sharing a meal. You know, one of the things, despite the fact that we are incredibly low key on Christmas, we kookily love Christmas movies. We find them really funny and, you know, interesting. Maybe it's because many Christmas movies center around dysfunction in a fun way that maybe that makes us feel, you know, more fun around it. So that's something that we do as a family, even as the kids are getting older. We'll you know, it's like, oh, we've watched Arthur Christmas 27 times. Let's watch it again, you know. And so that's one of our things. Very few things we do around Christmas. But it's finding that balance between letting go of the things that don't serve you and choosing actively the things you like. Isn't that funny? That's probably relevant for so many areas of life.
Absolutely. And I think that it's worth noting that for some people, you know, Christmas has religious significance, but for many of us, it is a consumerist holiday, right? And it is, at the end of the day, just one day of the year. And we don't have to show all of our love for someone on this day through one gift, through, you know, where we are. It can be spread out over, you know, a few months or the entire year. And something that I've noticed coming into December is I was starting to feel pressure to do Christmas baking and Christmas craft. And I love those things. But like the shops are so busy and it's so stressful to take kids up there and battle the lines to get the supplies. And I kind of realized that for us, these are things we do all year. We bake all year. We do craft all year. We can actually like take a break from it during the season when it's not as fun and as enjoyable because we have other things on. And that is not a representation of how good you are as a mother, whether you are going and seeing Christmas lights and doing craft and, you know, making jam from scratch for the teacher. These things are not tied up in our worth as mothers. They're things we can choose to do or choose not to do, depending on whether they align with our values. So the other day, my sister was like, texting me about gifts for the kids. So not only do I have to think about what we're getting the kids, it needs to be consistent, right? If you're going to a family event and there's going to be other children there, we want it to be pretty proportional, right? We don't want one kid getting, you know, a new iPad and the other one's getting socks and a new hat, because that can feel upsetting for kids, especially if they are buying into or hearing, which it's pretty unavoidable, this rhetoric of rhetoric.
Rhetoric.
I only ever read that word. But, you know, that naughty versus nice when it comes to Christmas. So if you're naughty, you won't get anything. If you're good, you will get anything. If then on Christmas Day, they open their presents and someone has gotten far, you know, objectively better presents than them, what message is that sending to their kid, to your kids? Mm. And we personally don't do this in our family. We don't ever threaten to call Santa. We don't ever threaten that he won't get gifts, because I think it's a pretty quick way to spoil the magic of Christmas if you are, you know, using it as a way to coerce your kids into behaving a certain way, especially when we know that for kids, behavior is communication. Kids are not inherently good or bad. They're not intentionally being, in air quotes, naughty. But this is something that we're hearing from family as well. You know, my grandparents and my in-laws saying, you know, if you do that, Santa's not going to bring you anything. And that's really hard because it's yet another area where we have to draw boundaries and, you know, potentially have tough conversations and say, you know, no, Santa will bring him gifts regardless, you know.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because we talk a lot about parenting styles and values of parenting and how they show up. It's almost like Christmas is a time where people feel they don't have to have permission to parent your children because it's like accepted by society. Like, have you written a letter to Santa? Have you been naughty this year? You know, you don't want to end up with a lump of coal. And it's almost socially acceptable to make a comment, which is a form of, you know, disciplining a child when they're not your children. Yeah. And I think what's really interesting is even for parents who most of the year want to parent differently, the pressure to convene. And I'm just going to make an admission and say I had the app on my phone where when the kids were naughty, I'm phoning Santa.
It's so effective though,
it's
right?
Really effective.
I've definitely done it in the past too, so absolutely no judgment. It's tempting because, you know, parenting is so tough. And if you find anything that can give you that edge and just make it a little bit easier.
I know. I feel like I need to have an amnesty for all the bad things I did to my kids when they were young. But in some ways, you know, and I think it really it's really determinant on how your individual child takes discipline as well. You know, I have one child who, you know, he's incredibly thick-skinned about any form of discipline, and another one that you just look at them the wrong way and he'll burst into tears.
Yeah.
So, but you know, that interesting point of it's just another pressure about questioning how do I want to parent, and whilst other people around you are using different ways. I'm curious just on that. What did you end up doing around the gift thing? Because I'm even curious at the age that your child and your niece, Do you think they understand the value of different gifts?
How
did
know.
You reconcile so that?
The end of that story was that my sister messaged me and said, this is what I've got for my daughter. Is that pretty consistent with what you have? Now, I want to say I don't actually think that we need to really compromise on our parenting values in order to accommodate others. You know, I think at the end of the day, if you feel strongly about something, it's okay to just say, this is how we're doing it and, you know, not change to accommodate others. But I think we're pretty aligned in that we are both pretty minimalist. We don't want to heap crap. So we both have a couple of things for the kids that are going to be from Santa, probably to the value of maybe $50. So it's not a lot. And then we've both kind of just lent into the fact that our family likes to spoil our kids. It is what it is. And they're battles that we personally don't want to fight. So I think that allows us to not give our kids a lot of gifts without any guilt or anything like that. It's like we're doing our little part and the rest of the family can do what they want. I did hear a good rule recently that someone said, my family can buy my kids whatever they want as long as it lives at their house. Now, that's not going to work if you're separated interstate, that kind of thing. But I think that, yeah, it's a good one because we've definitely done that in the past with like noisy toys. That's a Nana and Granddad's house kind of toy. So, yeah, we just had a conversation. But again, you know, we're women having these conversations. It's all part of the mental load of Christmas. Wouldn't even occur to my husband to check in about things like this. And I'm not sure how much of that is put on us by society and how much we put on ourselves. But I think just being conscious of it can allow us to think critically and go, you know, do we want to opt in or opt out of this and that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the last thing that we'll talk about, because whilst I think we generally try to avoid the C words, COVID and Christmas, I think one of the realities of the last few Christmases, whether it's related to border closures or just personal situation, is for some people, it's not a happy time. For some people, they remember loss. They may be on their own. They may not be in a good financial situation. they may not have people to spend that time with. And I think that's just about acknowledgement and maybe making sure that you are sensitive to that in terms of the people in your life, because often people may not point that out, but they may actually carry that around. And thankfully, we have lots of amazing support services. But in my experience, people don't always feel that they can use them. I think it's just being aware that it's not for everyone. It's a time of year where there's some challenging emotions around it as well.
Yeah, it's absolutely not going to be the most wonderful time of the year for everybody. And I think we want to really hold space for people who, you know, thought that it would look different or hoped that it would look different or dread this time of year, because that's a totally valid way to feel.
Yeah, absolutely. So whilst this appears to be a Christmas special, I think it really just tells the normal story of the types of conversations that Bree and I have through the lens of a particular event, which brings up a lot of emotions all at once at this particular time of the year. So we wish you a wonderful holiday season. And if you don't get the chance to take a holiday or a break, then make the most of the time that you have.
Absolutely. And I think we will probably be back in the studio, aka wardrobe, by about February next year. I reckon we'll have some episodes ready. What are you thinking?
Yeah. And if it's earlier, then it's a bonus.
Yes. Until then, we have plenty of episodes for you to listen back on. We would love if you took a moment to leave us a review after finishing this episode.
Absolutely. And as always, if you have feedback on the topics you want to listen to, please follow along on the Instagram at Matrescence Podcast.
I love that, at the Instagram. That's amazing. But yes, we are absolutely on Instagram at matrescence.podcast, and we would love to connect with you there.
It's not really the collective we. Bree is there and she will take your suggestions.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you so much.
See you soon. Thanks for joining us for today's conversation. If you want to hear more like this, don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss an episode. If you'd like to know more about anything we talked about or you heard on the podcast today, check out our website, www.birthofamother.com.au. You can find us on Instagram at matrescence.podcast or send us an email to info@birthofamother.com.au.
If you think others could benefit from this podcast, take a screenshot of you listening to this episode to post on your social media and tag us. Alternatively, consider leaving a review with your favourite things about the Matrescence podcast. This really helps us to increase our visibility and ensure we are reaching as many women as possible. As always, thank you for spending your time with us. We hope you will tune in next time.